This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey.
I'm doing ad-lib.
I-J-K-L-M-N-O-P-Q-R-S-T-U-V. That's terrible. V. What?
Why does V have such a moment?
V is lit. I'm a V.
It's horrific.
D-E-F-G. H-I-J-K-L-M.
Why?
That's crazy.
Q-R-S-T-U. Here we go.
V-W-X-Y-Z.
Damn, that V is insane.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's what 2019 was up to. I'm super close friends with Tim from Wild N Out that you might know.
De La Ghetto.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my guy, man.
He's.
We don't hang out a lot, but when we do, it's like no time has passed. It's
yeah.
Like I'm picking him up and running around in circles.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
He's the best. And his wife.
Yeah. He's oh, really?
Times.
Mm-hmm. That's what's up.
Yeah.
She got mad at us for not washing our faces properly.
I know, and now
I try. What's the proper way?
Just like a lot.
Let me tell you something, you guys. I was in a rush this morning, and I just grabbed a cloth that was in my shower and was wiping my face, and I was like, this has been used. Got it. Rewashing. So she'd be hella mad at me. I just use anything.
Oh, my God. I mean, sometimes I don't wash my face at all, and that is bad.
Yeah, but your skin looks fantastic. It can't be that bad.
I washed it today.
Hilarious. So yesterday it wasn't popping, but today it's wonderful?
That's right.
Okay.
Every day is different.
Well, her skin looks phenomenal over there as well.
Look at us.
Look at that glow.
Just how it's this lighting also that's helping us out
a
lot.
Is this the God light? I love it. This is a spectacular light. Actually, what is going on? The hula hoop with lights coming out the top?
That's look like an illuminated
hula hoop.
This
is a serious podcast studio. Can we just?
There's no jokes here. Only the ones that are recorded. Everything else is very on one.
This is serious. I mean, they've insulated one pipe. Like, this is the loud one. This is the real deal up in here.
Well, let's get into more jokes. Welcome to another episode of Just a Tip, an advice podcast that's equally about its tangents as it is about its tips. I'm your host, Megan Mattoon, and today to help me help you, the beautiful voice you've been hearing for maybe 3 minutes so far, being already hilarious, we got Nate Jackson in the studio.
What up, beautiful people?
Oh my God, it's a delight. We were talking about Tim earlier, and he was just like, he is such a sweet and funny guy.
Right.
And I was like, right. But it's just so nice that like you can be sweet and funny. That's a lot of times people don't get that.
I think what's so dope about Tim, and I'm talking about De La Ghetto, is that he's just genuine. So if he comes off sweet and funny, it is what it is. He don't care. He's just being him.
Yeah.
That's the dope part.
He said that about you.
Huh?
He said that you were sweet and funny.
We're the same. That's why, Wild N Out, once you've done it, we do our best to make sure that we always say good stuff because at the end of the day, it was overall a great experience, but it has its moments where it's so competitive
yeah.
And it's so like pirate-like that everyone's like, I got to get this moment. You know what I mean?
Right.
But Tim stays grounded and he's like, I'll just do me. And I was the same way. So whatever came my way, I killed whatever moment I had.
Yeah.
And that's why we like, magnetized towards each other because we saw that, like where we saw all the thirst in other people, we didn't see it in each other.
Right.
Yeah, so I guess I'm sweet.
You and funny. Are you from Los Angeles?
No.
Where are you from?
So I'm born and raised in Lacey, Washington, which Ooh. Is about an hour south of Seattle, which I have to say is where I'm from when you don't know Washington
For
State
sure.
like that. Like, where are you from? Seattle. And they're like, oh, what part? I'm like, oh, okay.
You're like, actually, I have not.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, that's not Seattle. I know, but you know.
I have a hard drive named Lacey.
Get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, L-A-C-I-E?
Yeah.
No, well, it's L-A-C-E-Y.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Lacey Musgraves.
Till the day I die. No, I'm just playing. We don't gangbang.
So you're on Wild On Now. You are a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
You have your own podcast, the New Jackson Radio Show.
I do.
But mm-hmm. I like to know my guests a little bit more for not their accomplishments, but for what they've said on the internet once.
Uh-oh.
So after a quick internet stalk, I found out that you hate thirst traps on Instagram. Just a chuckle.
I don't like them.
And what? Okay, so what constitutes a thirst trap?
A thirst trap is when a male or female do behavior that is to incite response.
Okay, so that's not all Instagram posts?
Nah, because it's a type of response you're looking for.
Okay.
You're looking for thirst.
Mm-hmm. So selfies, thirst traps?
No, because certain selfies, fine. Okay. You know the difference.
Well, I would love to hear it from you.
So let's say you hold your camera up and you take a selfie of yourself in a nice sweater, right? Nice okay. light. It's a beautiful picture. The sweater pops off your moisturized skin.
That's right.
Great picture. You would post that. Lots of likes. I see you doing your thing, girl. Now, you also take another picture where you tug on the sleeve of your sweater until some more shoulder skin is showing.
Okay.
Turn that so
Maybe
the light hits it,
hot.
And then you take that picture. If you're hot, you're hot with the sleeve up or down, right?
No, I mean like temperature-wise.
I'm tired of it. And the other thing is, everybody has, like, you need to, like, you know, you're your biggest fan or whatever, so you can post your stuff. Cool. You can even thirst trap a little. My thing is when it is just a diet of thirst traps.
Yeah.
Cookies are okay, but not every meal.
Right.
Spread them out, ladies. Please. Before it looks like you're for sale, and we don't want that.
True.
Yeah.
Do you ever look at your social media and you're like, oh, this is going to sound crazy, but, like, trying to figure out who you would think you were? Based off of what?
If another person looked at me,
yeah,
how they would perceive me all the time. Like,
right. Like, do you feel
that's
like,
why I'm like, can you take that picture again? I'm going to suck in. Like, I'm so worried about it. You know what I mean? And that's not for thirst's sake. It's because, you know, a Pooh Bear gut isn't as attractive as a flat situation. So, yeah, no, all the time. I mean, I think that is our biggest challenge, actually, because unless you have a team of people around you making sure that your image is intact all the time, then it's on you to be like, how does this look?
Yeah.
There's people so particular, like the color scheme of my IG has to all be pinks, siennas, and
yeah, I think they call it the aesthetic. And
it's called,
like TM. It's trademarked almost.
Wow.
Yeah. I just like, I would be so tired. Like, I have been doing this social media thing for so long to where I'm just tired now. Like, I'll just be, this is the craziest thing. Have you ever taken a photo or signed up for something and it's like, take a profile photo and you always upload one? You're like, oh, this is my like go-to photo.
Yeah.
I just be taking photos direct from Instagram. I don't even take them on my camera roll anymore.
Really?
Yes.
You're like, this will work. So all of your social media?
Not all of it.
So Facebook has a different profile picture than Twitter?
Yeah.
You're not uniform anywhere?
Nope.
Okay, so after this, we're going to hang out and we're going to get your stuff right. Let me tell you what. First of all, not only is it better for the user and they expect that because everyone's doing it, but it gives you peace of mind. Like, just get the one picture that's really popping, put it everywhere. So people are like, oh, that's her. You know what I'm saying?
On the majority of my socials, yes, but on Facebook, my picture is covering my face.
Hilarious.
Like, it's like a photo that someone took while I was at a restaurant and the server was taking a plate off the table. And it's just like me sipping sangria, but like the server's arm is in front of my face.
So you can't even see yourself?
No.
Why?
I just thought it was funny.
That is funny. I don't know. I don't know why it is this way, but like a long time ago, there was this OG comedian that was like, don't you ever cover your face.
Really?
Yeah. There was like a flyer I had made and it said like Nate Jackson or everybody on the flyer, like their name kind of came like right by their chin. And he called me. It was like, nah, don't never cover no one's face. It's how we make all our money.
Oh.
I was like, ooh.
I mean, that's really true. But to hear it so sternly.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, cool. And I moved it down like 10 pixels and everybody was happy. But I was like, dang, I was about to break a law.
Damn.
It's the reason why, like, we don't know football players.
Yeah.
For every team with like 52 dudes on a roster, we might know four or five by face.
Right.
But basketball teams got five dudes on the court, and we know all of them by face.
That's so true.
That's why football players are always trying to take their helmet off so you can see them.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Dang.
That's your face.
That's your face.
And you got a good face.
You got a good face, too.
You show that thing.
Yeah. I'll show it everywhere, not on Facebook.
It's called Facebook.
You're right. Actually, I have broken the law.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not Waiter's Arm Book. Show that face.
Have you learned anything else from anyone around you, whether it was other comedians or something like that, that's similar to the never cover your face rule?
Dope. Segue alert. That's a dope segue. Yes. And so I had the email before,
but segue alert.
I want to stay loose. Like, I saw the email. I was like, she's going to ask me this and that and this and this. And I was like, you know what? Nah, I'm not going to. I'm going to just go in and riff. This is me buying time to give you a good answer. Any other advice that I had gotten from somebody?
Because that was like really impactful. If someone said that to me, comics, I would remember. Like,
for sure.
Don't cover your face.
Yeah, super simple. So I got this book a long time ago called The Comedy Bible.
Okay.
Have you heard of this?
No, I have heard of the Hack Handbook.
Is that for Russians?
Yeah, just escape rooms and amateur comics.
And Donald Trump's presidency.
It was only three pages long. It was not a book.
Okay, well, this is like a real book. Like, this thing is like maybe 350 pages or something, like fat. This
That's
lady
like a
named
Harry Potter
Judy
book.
Carter. Yeah, but it's like full of knowledge and, you know, even like how to write jokes, then how to find open mics and how to get paid on shows, how to travel, how to build a tour, how to find an agent, how to
nice.
Like, and that's like six of the chapters out of 29. Like, it's a very, very in-depth, wonderful look at the business of comedy and how to go from working at Ralph's to being Ralphie May.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Nice.
And, you know, let's take a second and just reflect on actually how dope that was. Go from working at Ralph's to being Ralphie May. I didn't have that when I came in here. That just popped into, look at that.
Look at life.
That's the HeadGum. That's something you can chew on with your mind.
Nice.
Anyway, so I found it such a dope resource that I've revisited it over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's had a different impact each time because I'm at a different level in my career when I revisited it, right? And so when people ask me, which I get all the time, hey, I'm thinking about doing comedy. What should I do? You know, I say you should get The Comedy Bible by Judy Carter.
Cool.
She's not paying me to say that. It's just that dope of a resource. And that's the most annoying question. So that's an easy answer to give someone. You know what I mean?
It's just like everything is so individual that there's no one size fits all for anything.
Right.
That's why an advice podcast is so hilarious, because everyone's different. And what you would do is going to be so different than what I would do.
Right. But like, I wrote a book myself too, right? Like, it's my book is specifically about how to promote a one-nighter for comedy.
Okay, yeah.
Right? Like, which can financially and reputation-wise change a young comedian's life. Mm-hmm. Any comedian, really. The most successful nights in the country are these one-nighters. They're in clubs.
Right.
So I say in the foreword, kind of, you're all going to take what I say the way you want to receive it. I can't control that, and I cannot guarantee success.
Mm-hmm.
And just apply as much of this as you can to how your recipe works.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Let's just not gloss over the fact that you wrote a book. How long did that take? Congratulations.
Thank you. It took a round-trip international flight and then another, like, 2 months.
Okay.
But I got the bulk of it done on a flight. I think it was like an 18-hour flight or something, and I stayed up the whole time and wrote, and then the same thing back. So I had put 36 hours like straight into this thing. And once you have the structure of it and you're just filling it in, like, it was just flying from my brain. Like, I couldn't keep up. There was so much information. I was just pecking away. You know, then when I wasn't typing, I was writing. Because I just decided I'm going to give the entire game up of every single aspect of promoting a night of comedy that I can.
Yeah.
And so I had some history in promotions and party promoting, things like that. So, like, I've taken... sopped up some of the stuff from that side of the game, like this can apply best for comedy, and and how to go from literally having, like, you can throw a show that makes you $5,000, makes you live, that everyone's paid, everyone's happy.
Mm-hmm.
And what you put up based on the timeline of what you need to pay for, you can do it all with $10.
Whoa.
You do it all with $10. You know what I'm saying? Like, because I'll teach you, like, this is what a flyer should look like. So here's the apps to do it for free.
Sure.
You did that for free.
Right.
You got some tickets. You put them on sale. You order pre-sale tickets. They're 10 cents a ticket. So now you got 100 tickets. You sell those. You sell 100 of those at $20. Now you've made some real money, right?
Yeah.
So you got 100 tickets at $20. You got $2,000. Now you can buy flights, now you can buy hotel reservations, now you can buy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All based off your flyer and how far out. And so I teach that. I don't literally teach a person how to do that, because again, people are going to receive it however, but it's glossary style. So it's in alphabetical order. If you have a question pertaining to an alcohol deal, that would be an A. If you have one in bartering, it would be in B. Like, I just made it so that it was a resource.
That's so cool.
Right. So that's why it was so easy to write, because I would think of something, ticketing. And then I'd just go straight to T and be like, and
got it, got it.
So I'm not like, most of the challenge for an author would be writing this thing that chronologically goes from a beginning, middle, and an end. And all. I was just like, nah, here's the information.
Yeah.
You feel me? So I made it easy.
Oh, that's sick. What's it called? Where can people find it?
Well, it's called Sold Out, the ABCs of a Successful Comedy Room. And I don't even know if the site is still up.
I love that. That
just
sounds
DM
so
me,
cool.
I guess, and I'll give you the link directly to it. But it's like, I think it's like 140 pages or something like that. And it comes with, there's some videos and stuff I made to support it. And I interviewed like Faison Love and some other big comics and talked to them about it.
Sick.
And then I just kind of like stopped, because it was like, I had this room in Washington State that was so successful, but nobody respected Washington State.
Mm.
But now that I'm opening this comedy club,
yeah,
they're going back to be like, wait, what did he do?
Cool.
So now it's cool new information.
Oh, that's so sick. All right. Well, this is not a dope segue alert. But before we get too far into all of this, because I definitely want to learn so much from you, I want to learn a little bit more about you before learning from you. This is a game I call Burst of Firsts. It's one round of rapid fire questions, everything from your first job to the first time you cried in public, etc. Whenever I yell stop, you have to either explain, elaborate, or tell the full story.
And you don't think that was a dope segue? Got it. Before I learn from you, I want to learn about you.
And I didn't walk in with that.
Okay.
Here we go. What was your first job?
I sold king size candy bars and candies next to the vending machine for less than the regular size ones at the school.
What grade was this?
I was a freshman.
Nice. A hustler. First cell phone.
LG flip phone, old school T9 texting.
First pet.
My own personal pet, a chocolate lab that I named Tag.
Oh, first kiss location.
On my lips. I don't know who I don't know where I was.
First major purchase.
I bought a Super Nintendo gaming system with my own money.
Yeah.
And I thought that was the bee's knees.
That was the bee's knees. First choice in a karaoke book.
Cisco Incomplete.
Love that. First internet screen name.
Mr. Nate Jackson.
Oh, nice.
I think at one point maybe I had Funny Boy Nate Jackson, but that was an email.
Of course. First thing you think when someone doesn't answer the phone.
She's dead.
First celebrity crush.
Sanaa Lathan, and that is intact.
First concert.
The OJs.
First scar.
Right here under my right eye.
Okay, we're going to stop here because it looks like you want to tell me.
Well, I was like, she's going to stop me if I, anyway.
I do want to know.
So just tell you more about the scar?
Yeah. How'd you get it? Where were you? What were you thinking?
Okay. So the house that my family, our forever home, we like built, but we moved into it when we were nine. When I was nine, excuse me. And there was a lot of people that helped us to build it, like the staff, the workers or whatever. And there was a kid named Ricardo. And he was, his dad was like one of the workers, but me and Ricardo got like to kick it. Like they were like, just the kids, just get out the way. Like we're building the whole foundation of this home over here. Mm-hmm. And so me and Ricardo would always be running around and playing whatever. And so we were playing, tag or something in like these woods, but it wasn't like a full forest. It's just a little wooded area. Like you could see us, you know what I mean? Okay. And so, and you could see all the way through to the neighbor's property. So it's not like we were like
M. Night Shyamalan. Yeah.
No, this wasn't like a haunted, like we're running through the woods and no. Anyway, so there was a stick laying, I guess you would say it was a stick laying there from left to right, essentially. And then there was another stick laying across it. And it was set up in a way that a third stick laying on the end of the other one, when I stepped on it, it like catapulted it up. And so it hit me right under the eye and made like a 1-inch scar on my face. And so I came out of the woods holding my whole eye, and my mom was like, my baby eyeball and fell out. And I showed her, and there's blood on my hand. She's like, oh my God. And then once we realized, like, oh, it's just, it was so insignificant. In fact, once we cleaned it and saw it, oh, okay.
Right.
Like it didn't need stitches. Oh. But it was like scary because it was like, you know, an eye injury.
I think
it's on the other cheek. I've been holding my right cheek this whole time. I think it's actually on the left. That's how insignificant it was.
I love it. Okay.
Shout out to Ricardo, wherever you are.
When's that time you talked to him?
After the house got built. they're like, Andale. Everybody was gone. I'm like, what happened?
First show you binge watched.
SWAT Cats.
SWAT Cats?
As a kid. As an adult, Breaking Bad.
What's SWAT Cats?
Okay, so SWAT Cats. Is that a stop? Are we stopping?
I think it will be a stop, actually.
Okay, so SWAT Cats was a cartoon where there's this like skinny cat and this chubby cat, and they are mechanics.
Mechatics.
There you go. And they're also superheroes, basically. So they'll be fixing like this raggedy truck, and then like they'll get an alert, and they go into the bottom of their mechanic thing, and they leave in like a F-14 jet. SWAT Cats, and they go save the world.
I've never heard of this before.
I couldn't stop watching it.
Wow.
Yeah. It was the first by day you did something, and then by night you did something else.
Right. For me.
Yeah. They should remake SWAT Cats.
Well, how is it, like a 90s show?
It was just a cartoon. I think so.
Well.
It came on there was like 15 cartoons that would come on in a certain order.
Yeah.
And SWAT Cats came on pretty early because as a kid, I could only watch 1 hour of cartoons on Saturday mornings. And so that's the one I chose.
Oh, that's so cool that you had like a routine.
Yeah.
Do you watch cartoons ever now?
Of course. When you get limited like that, you're like, all I watch is cartoons. My dad was just like, I don't want you watching all that stuff.
Yeah, it's
go
probably
outside and play.
Best.
But I would wake up at like 5 a.m. and be like, can I go watch my hour? Because I knew there's no way he's going to wake up at 6 to stop me.
Yeah.
So I would get like 4 shows in before he'd come down.
Nice.
You know, turn it off.
Hacking the system.
Hacking it.
Okay, last two. First excuse you make when trying to cancel plans.
I'm honest.
That's so good.
Yeah, I'm just
people
like,
should be more like you. People being me. First time you cried in public. This is our last first.
I haven't.
You've never cried in public?
I don't think so.
Okay, I will absolutely stop here.
I just haven't.
Do you?
What?
Oh my God.
Are you one of those girls that picks movies to have a good cry?
Of course.
Okay. I just came across this like 2 weeks ago. My homegirl Sue Kim in Washington State and her friend Candace, they do this. Like they go and pick movies to make sure that they cry. Like,
yes.
It's a Jerry Maguire night. Like they know what's going to jam them up.
That's right.
Okay. So the only time I've cried, now let's say in public, but I wasn't like in public view, like in a movie theater or something.
Yeah.
Every time this particular type of moment happens in a movie, it gets me. I might not cry, but I'm like, oh, they tried.
What is it? Tell me.
It's when the underdog finally overcomes.
Oh.
And I know it's coming. It's like the goofy player that like, they show the montage of his skills getting better. And then here comes the slow motion Hail Mary. Like, I'm like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
And as soon as it hits their grasp, I'm like, oh, they tried to get me.
They tried to get me.
But it's pitch dark. So I'm like, oh, no, I didn't cry. We're good. Ah, fuck, do that.
I think for me, it's when there's a father-daughter moment, like an Interstellar. Like, that was a whole thing. Marriage Story. Did you see that movie?
No.
That one.
Do you have a dad?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and your relationship is so strong that anything similar to it jams you up?
I think it's not strong. So that when I see something be really strong, it's like, oh, wow, that would be so nice.
So you cry over the hypothetical situation.
I cry over every hypothetical situation,
so
Nate.
You cry over better dads. Is that what I'm getting?
Yeah, that's why Will Smith is hard for me.
Right? He is unreal. They should just rename Father's Day to Will Smith Day. Like, it's ridiculous. I don't even have kids, and I'm like, come on. When did he have time to go?
How does he do it?
How? Like, he travels the entire world with each child separately in the middle of doing 4 feature films at once?
Right.
Bruh.
I don't understand Will Smith. Me neither.
Mm-mm. And then he learns his son's song and then does a remix on his own. Like,
and then
when?
He's cool. He's still like hip.
My theory is there's 2 Wills. Like Ashley and Kate Olsen or whatever, but they never
I love Ashley
have released,
and Kate Olsen.
Yeah, was it Mary Kate or whatever?
That's right.
Yeah, so they made the whole Full House off of one
That's
role.
Right. Yes.
But they would switch the babies out based on their temperament. And I think there's 2 Wills.
That would be so
right. And that's why I think one does like more corny like stuff than the other one. Like one is the freestyle rapper that gets on his son's song without permission.
Right.
And does the shiggy dance on top of a bridge
I
in
like
Prague.
I like that, Will Smith.
Well, of course we all do. And then the other one, you know, and that one does Bad Boys and stuff. And then the other one is like on Red Table talking about how he hit Jada with a newspaper. Like that's a whole nother Will.
That's a whole nother Will.
Interesting.
Speaking of different Wills. Do you have a will? Like when you
I
die?
When I pass away? And you really don't think you're the queen of segways? Are you kidding me?
Oh, thank you.
Keyword pivot. I don't have a will.
I don't either.
Nah.
When do you think you'll write one?
Probably after this. Because I hadn't thought about doing one before now.
I haven't either.
No, I don't have a will. But I do. I have life insurance.
You do?
Uh-huh.
How is that?
I had to get it.
What do you mean?
So I'm opening a comedy club in Washington State, and they're like, you have to have life insurance.
Oh, no.
I think that's good.
I mean, it is good, but like, you know because if like somebody is crazy?
I don't know, but I feel like if something happened to me, the value of the club skyrockets, just like every other person who passed away's record sales or whatever.
Right.
I'm not encouraging that something happens to me by any means, but I found that basically they do this. It's a normal practice. Like, say it's a dentist office, mm-hmm. and the dentist is the one doing primarily most of the work or whatever, so they would have that dentist get like this kind of life insurance and injury insurance. That way if they say they go on a motorcycle and they hurt their hands and they can no longer do dentistry work,
mm-hmm.
well, they still got bills to pay.
Totally.
And so that insurance would kick in and cover. And so that's essentially what I had
got
to get.
It.
But I hadn't thought about anything like that before this.
Right.
Yeah.
I've never heard really too much of life insurance except for as a retirement plan, like a supplemental retirement plan.
Right. So because you are around very, very rich white people.
Am I?
You must be if you've heard it that way. Because black people, we'd be like, well, I ain't gonna never die. Let me go get some Popeyes. Like, it's ridiculous what we do to ourselves health-wise and expect to live forever. But, like, using life insurance as a savings method is, like, that's, like, a rich white.
Is it?
Yeah, it's, like, a white-collar way of saving money.
Oh, I had
money.
No idea.
Yeah, because
I literally
it accrues much faster.
Yeah.
And, matter of fact, billionaires and millionaires were getting multiple life insurance policies on themselves. Hmm. And then when they would mature, like, you know, they hit their 10-year mark or whatever, they would cash them out.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did it so much that the government added some type of subsidiary, something to it, to where it, like, made it so, like, oh, it's not popping
like
anymore.
Oh, it's not popping? Yeah. Oh, that's
when you got
so
60
sad.
Life insurance outs on you, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, damn.
But I have life insurance. I do need to make a will. I don't know. I don't have kids, so I don't know who all I would leave things to.
Yeah.
I feel like your parents take over, right?
I would give everything to my parents.
Yeah, that's fine with me.
It's fine with you that I give everything to my parents?
I mean, that works for both of us, is what I'm saying.
I think this
I don't know if you should give it to your dad based on what you just said. You might want to find a better dad to give it to. Maybe give it to Will Smith.
Oh, I would give anything to Will Smith. One time I wrote, this is not a Will Smith related thing, but just like celebrities in general.
Uh-huh.
I one time wrote a birthday card to Justin Timberlake and my mom got really mad that I wanted to send it. and I didn't know why she got mad.
Did you read it?
Well, it was probably like, hey, Justin, hope
yeah, but have you gone back and read what you wrote?
No, of course not.
Because maybe your mom read it and was like, absolutely not.
Like, I'm the first stan.
How old were you?
Like 12.
And he was grown?
Of course. He was NSYNC prime.
Oh, yeah. I'd have been mad, too.
Why?
Like the little boys at school. Stop trying to be...
That is true. I mean, yeah. He's older.
What are you trying to get abducted? Go down there and play tetherball. I don't need you writing love letters to... You know what I mean?
I always liked an older guy. I remember when I was, I think, 14, I liked a 17-year-old who was trying to give me guitar lessons. And my mom was not okay. Why did I like him?
Yeah, your mom spent her whole life trying to slow you down.
That's true.
So you also were the little girl, I'm just guessing, that you had posters on your ceiling or and or your walls?
I don't think I had posters because we didn't, no. I made my posters out of little shards of magazine paper.
Oh, you hodgepodged your...
That's right.
And like you would, who was your
I remember having,
go-to?
There, well, it was like a band. I was like a little emo kid.
Okay.
So I remember getting, like when you buy a full length mirror, it comes with that cardboard backing to make sure the glass doesn't break.
Yes.
So I took that and put it horizontally and I ripped up a bunch of magazine pages, like colorful ones. And then in the negative space, I wrote out this band's name called Sugar Cult. And then on the outsides, I pasted all of the little mosaics so that it said Sugar Cult.
Wow.
I didn't really have a lot of money, but I had a lot of craftiness.
Why did you like Sugar Cult?
I don't know.
Were they hot?
They were just like, they weren't so angsty as all the other emo bands, which I love angst, but they were just like, here's some rock music and like, it's loud.
Got it.
That's what I liked back then.
They just did their thing, said it, forget it, and you fell in love with it.
Yeah. I like people that are straight to the point.
So then how does Timberlake become somebody who you want?
I don't know. Maybe it's because I could never have him.
It's not too late. You ever been to Memphis?
I haven't.
Well, listen, for your listeners that are in Memphis, 6 degrees of separation, somebody knows Justin personally. Or you know his cousin, or you know... He probably has an ugly brother that nobody gets any pictures of.
And I'm in.
For the ugly brother?
Sure, I'm in for anyone at this point, Nate.
She's like, please. Maybe you should post a couple thirst traps.
Uh-oh.
Hey.
But then people like you are going to hate me.
Nah, a couple is a good...
I don't think I've ever posted a thirst trap.
Well, after this, we'll go outside, pull the sleeve down a little bit on your sweater, put you in the right light, show some skin, and see what happens.
And see what happens. Sometimes I was thinking about one time doing an experiment where I created an Instagram account from zero.
Okay.
And just saw how fast I could grow by being the worst person on the internet. Like, not the worst, like Donald Trump, but like the worst in, like, I'm just showing my body off and being like, but that's so not me.
What's the sound?
It's like if the Pillsbury Doughboy was getting murdered. Like, it's just like.
Like if you poked him in the butt and not the stomach. I think that it would grow pretty fast. I think you'd be surprised.
I just like, I want to do it as like a stick it to the
mad.
Man. But yeah, but I think I'll be just
when
so mad.
When that one passes, the one where you've been.
Just myself.
A good person.
Yeah.
You'd be like, God, America.
It's like just to like prove a point that I don't think I want to be proven.
I mean, it's have you been keeping up with the Kardashians? You don't have to run this experiment in your own life. Just turn on TV.
Oh, just turn on TV. All right. Before we get too sad, we'll take a break while you can find extra piece of advice that Nate gives us on at Just a Tip Podcast on Instagram. And we will be right back in a less sad mood. I'm not sad.
Me neither.
Cool.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Ready to come back?
Yeah, I didn't go nowhere.
Please, let's keep that. And we're back. Before we get into act number two, I want to know what you are obsessed with right now, if anything. Anything that, like, came into your life and you need everyone to know about it because your life is better now.
No.
Nothing.
I'm not obsessing over anything.
Do you obsess over anything ever?
The last thing that I was like... No, I'm going to be honest with you. I get fully immersed in things. I like learn a new thing, tinker. And
me
then,
too.
So, like, the last two obsessions that I had, I would say one was I bought a new record player and I was buying vinyls.
Uh-huh.
And then the other one was Fortnite. And I hit the road for, like, 28 days straight, and I was away from my Xbox and my record player. And so I nipped those in the bud.
Oh, my. So you're like whole hog and then no hog.
Yeah. Okay, so here's something I'm doing right now. Uh-huh. What I did No Meat November.
How was it?
My blood pressure went down and I lost a little bit of weight.
Cool.
And so, but I learned a lot about myself in regards to, like, there's a lot of people that don't realize, you know, you can get full eating what you don't have a taste for.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. A lot of people are like, no, I have a taste for. And then they go get that and they overeat on that. Well, I had to learn, like, okay, well, I can just get full on broccoli and I'll be good. Or I can just, you know what I mean?
Right.
Not that I'm eating only broccoli. It was just my example.
You're a monster.
Right? So No Meat November. And then I'm adding, like, shrimp and fish now.
Yum. Oh, my God. I'm starving.
But I've been losing a bunch of weight that way. But I'm not weighing myself. But, like, what'll happen is, since I was gone the 25 days and came back, like, this morning I saw my homeboy and he was like, yo, you're losing weight.
Cool.
And I'm like,
that's always really nice when other people, because, like, you see your body every day. You can't really see these small changes. So
the worst is when you can see it, but nobody else can.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, well, seriously, there's a new ab, like a thing. I see it. And there's a dimple. And anything that goes in on a
we
chubby
got a
person,
dimple.
It's not an ab yet, but we got an ab. You know what I'm saying? And then people, you're like, do you see that? And they're like, nah, you got to keep working. Come on, bro. Give me the credit for it. I think there's a conspiracy. People are like, we're not making fat people feel good.
Oh, my God.
They give you nothing.
We give you nothing. How about helping someone else? What do you say?
I'm big on that.
Oh, that's great. Because here's someone in need of help.
Hi, Megan. I'm calling in because I realized I'm really bad at small talk and I just feel really awkward meeting new people because of that. And I think it's because I try too hard to be funny and it's not super natural for me. So do you have any advice on how to be funnier or at least better ways to start and continue a conversation? Thanks. From Humorless Human.
That's a good anonymous name. But wow, I think those are two so very different things.
Like, I only heard one.
How to be funnier?
Oh, I get what you're saying. How to small talk and then how to be funnier.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess
two things then.
Yeah, two things. Yeah, I think how to be funnier and then, like, starting and continuing a conversation. So different.
I think they're similar, though.
I think they are, too. But I think that not everyone needs to be funny.
Where is that person from? That sounded so good.
Like the quality of it?
Yeah. Are they just talking into their iPhones and sending in voice notes?
I just turn around. They're in the back of my chair.
That is incredible.
Whole time.
You're like, it was me holding my nostrils.
Maybe it was a voice note. Hey, technology, what up?
Yo.
But I think that in my experience, whenever I try too hard to be funny, when I try to be funny at all, I'm not. Like, it's bad. I remember I accidentally took a stand-up class. And But I thought it was going to be a different class. And so I took it to help with this podcast, actually. But then I didn't realize it was a stand-up class. And then I just decided to continue with the course. It was like eight weeks or something like that, 5 weeks. But every time that I had something pre-written, it would never get a laugh. And like whenever I did one open mic and every joke that I wrote, except for like the first one, was like crickets. But then in between the jokes, I would just be myself and that would get the laugh. And I was like, I want to pull my hair out. So it's like in conversation, I mean, you do this professionally. So of course, like you write and you improv at the same time and like you're great at it and you're naturally funny. But for people that aren't naturally funny, how, like, do you think that everyone needs to be funny? in conversation?
No.
I think that when people put too much pressure on themselves to be funny, to be liked, then you're... I think when you're trying too hard to do anything, you're pushing too much.
I don't know. I feel like if I was doing a free solo climb, no matter how hard I tried, it's acceptable.
Yeah.
Give your all.
All the time.
But this is the thing. Nobody wants to try hard in conversation, right?
But yeah.
But nobody would notice if you tried hard at certain elements of conversation.
Such as?
Okay. So my advice for this person is conversation is a dialogue, right? So there's a part where you're putting out information and there's a part where you're receiving it. I think if you put more emphasis on the part where you're receiving the information, i.e. listening better, being more present, that your small talk would be doper because then it won't feel like it's all being thrown away.
Mm-hmm.
When you say, how are your kids and how's your family? Listen, because then you can respond versus having it in the can already and being like, and whatever you come loaded with already, it may not fit the scenario. But if you listen,
yeah,
then you just have the regular conversation. And now you've made eye contact, you've channeled better with the person, and the ice is broken.
How do you break the ice initially?
I mean, look a person in their eye and speak. But
You know. But what do you say? How do you start a conversation with a stranger if you're just a nervous person in general?
I don't know. And I try not to give advice because this is the thing. I've lived my life a certain way. Like, I am a Alpha Leo Jackson male. And to give advice to a Beta,
right,
Sagittarius female or whatever.
Yeah.
If they take that advice, it's going to be like a complete switch. Now, that's what happens when, so now you've done it and it worked. Now you're like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. What do I do next?
Yeah.
Now you're in my DMs. Okay, so it worked. Now what? Like, no, so I think the advice I can give is listen. And that's normally what they teach you in acting. When you're learning how to act, you're listening.
Totally.
And even in stand-up, even though you're doing all that talking and putting out content to an audience for an hour when you headline like I do, a lot of listening is happening because how do you know the cadence at which they're ready for the next bits if you're not listening for when the laughs are or what topics are getting the strongest laughs? Because then you can like stay in that and ring it out and really get it. And so for you, where you had the one experience with the open mic, what you went through was the difference between preparation and preparation still, I guess you would call it. Like, you wrote jokes and you prepared for the show for 8 weeks max, right? Because you said the class was 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
But you've been you for years and years and years, probably 22 years, you've been you, right?
So thank you.
You went up there with 8 weeks of material, and that stuff wasn't working, but every time you gave them the 22 years of you, they laughed.
Right.
So the key is to present the 8 weeks of material with the voice of 22 years of you. And that's when you have found your voice. A comic who has their voice can read a newspaper article, think of something funny, and they think of the way to present it to an audience and say it.
Right.
And it's not like, oh, I'm throwing this against the wall. It's like, that was hysterical.
Yeah.
Like, D.L. Hughley may tweak a word or two, but his voice is already, it's already a fine-tuned factory of creating humor that fits his voice. And then the audience receives it. And then he listens and then he delivers his stuff. So I think when you do your next open mic.
Well, let's not go that far.
I don't see why not. You need a boo. He's probably going to go to a show. So let's get you out of the house and laughing and telling jokes. But for those who are listening who are like, oh, I had that same thing or whatever, it's like that's the bridge you need to cross. You need to cross the bridge for your material to go from just like how you wrote it or how you told yourself in the car to it seems like you've been saying it for a long time.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And I learned that from watching Chris Spencer work.
Okay.
And so Chris Spencer is like Mr. Hollywood. Like, there's no production in Hollywood that's like, that is black that he doesn't have, it seems like that he doesn't have something to do with. He's either the host or the writer's room or a producer or somebody ran it by him or he consulted it. And it's been like that for years. And when Chris performs, if you've never seen him before, you're like, that dude just went up with no set list. Like, he didn't know what he was going to talk about.
Right.
Then you go to another show and you're like, God, it still feels like that. Then you go to another show and you're like, oh, he's working. He has a toolbox of jokes. Okay. And then he'll pull out that tool to tweak that. And he'll take out this wrench of a joke and he'll wrench that. And if they like that, then he just stays on the wrench. Mm. Thank you. Good night. And you're like, get that killed.
Right.
And so it's a whole nother form of doing stand-up that it is an ebb and a flow and a listening and a balance than most acts where, like, you see a person with five jokes on a napkin. Like, I'm going to tell these no matter how they receive them.
Right.
Nah, Chris is like, and so I saw this, I don't know, 15 years ago. I was like, I'm definitely changing my approach to stand-up. And I have.
That's
essentially what I'll get. I'll know what I'm going to start with, and I'll have an idea what I want to end with, mm-hmm. and I will segue us all the way to where they're ready for what I intended to tell.
Yeah. So that is so cool.
I hope that helps the person.
I mean, I think this will help anyone. That's so smart. Like, when did you find your voice to merge all of the things that you wanted to talk about? If you had a toolbox of jokes, like, when did you feel like it all kind of clicked for you? If there was a moment?
No, there was. I had to have my montage moment. You know, like when you watch a movie and there's a ragtag team of rascals. And then they have this
montage moment.
Right. And they montage. You see them getting better and better and winning games. And then they're like, now they're in the championship game to possibly win it all. Well, I had to have my moment. And so I was the ragtag rascal when I first moved to L.A. And then I moved back to Seattle. And then I saved a bunch of money by producing shows, hence the knowledge to write the book. And then I moved back. But what I did in that time was I applied a lot of the stuff that I saw and learned in the first trip to L.A., mm-hmm. And Seattle is out of the public, it's out of the view. It's out of the, you know what I mean? There's not 50 comics in the room watching, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was able to say, all right, I'm going to go on stage with no set list, deliberately.
Yeah.
Hosting, and then just like make fun of the surroundings, make fun of something that's going on, tell a story about that day. And you start to channel it. It
yeah.
starts to grow in you. It's just like, it's organic for it to grow.
Right.
Some people it takes 5 years of that. Some people it takes 5 months of that. But I got to where I was going on stage with nothing and walking off victorious
yeah.
from 5 minute, 10 minute, 7 minute, you know, 20 minute sets.
Yeah.
And I mean, at one point I did an hour where I just riffed and just ripped off the room and talked to like each person, and we had crowd work, and then there was callbacks, and then told stories based on what they were telling me. And so it was like a wonderful, people were just like, I feel like that was a completely custom made performance for me.
Yeah.
You can't do all of your comedy like that, because if you're going to do a tape and they're like, we need to know what you're going to talk about, you're like, hell, I don't know. Just call me out. That's never going to work.
Yeah.
But I had to go back to Washington, essentially the dojo, and do it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I do what is like, I think, I don't think anything's perfect, but I do a great blend of both.
Yeah.
Of having a prepared set list, but also willing to segue completely off.
That's so smart.
For who knows how long, and then pop back into set if I need to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think if more comics were willing to do that, or if they came up that way, like riffing and being sharp like that, I think that all the comedy would be better.
I agree. It's also like not selfish. Like if you go on stage and you are listening and you're giving it's almost like audience first. Mm-hmm. You're thinking of like, how can I make this about them?
Right.
And have them receive you in a way that is like respectful, and you guys are doing it together. I mean, that's like, there's terrible improv out in the world, but like the one good thing about improv, not the one good thing, there's a lot of good things about improv, but like that show can't exist without the audience. And it's the same with anything, with stand-up, with podcasts, with videos. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't exist without the audience. So make them a part of it, include mm-hmm. them.
I mean, they're a part of it regardless. So I'm not necessarily saying I'm looking for feedback from like hecklers or anything like that.
Well,
but
yeah.
If you just watch what they laugh at the hardest, like you can tell when a crowd is like, oh, they like sex jokes.
Right.
You know what I mean? You can watch the other comics before you're like, oh, they like the clever stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or, oh, they like a good story. Just pay attention to the show. And if you're first, just kind of put out a bit. So you got one bit that's one way, a second bit that's a different way, and the third one is one way. If they're dying off the second one, you don't get to the third one. You just stay in the vein of how the second one was.
Yeah.
And I got it now to where I can tell the same joke different ways to reach that.
Oh, fun.
But you know, I'm not trying to be like, oh, I'm the sensei of this, but listening matters.
Totally.
In regular conversation and listening to the crowd, there's nothing worse than a comic who has great material but doesn't slow down to listen, like, to know the right pacing of it.
Yeah.
Either too slow or too fast or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's Goldilocks. You got to find that right place to lay down your punchline.
Totally. I think that's such good advice for everyone. I mean, I think we helped Humorless Human. Well, we didn't touch on one thing. We talked about starting and continuing conversation. Mm-hmm. But this is probably like the craziest question, I think, but maybe not to you, but advice on how to be funnier. Like, I don't know if I could say anything except for try not to be funny in my experience. But for you, when you're like, go all the way, what would you say to a question like that?
It's hard to call because I don't know the specific scenario that they're talking about. I'm imagining she's at a housewarming type of party and standing next to the punch and there's a guy standing there.
Sure.
And then she moseys over kind of shoulder to shoulder and there's an opportunity for a line to be given.
Mm-hmm.
And I think listening takes the form of, you know, people watching, like take in the environment, take in the room, take in what was just heard and comment on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
But
like, boy, this punch could use a little kick, huh? Now you're in it.
You know? Now you're in.
Right. And they could backfire. They're like, I've been clean and sober for 25 years.
You're like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, that's cool. I got coins in my pocket, too. Like, just keep it going. You know what I mean?
But how can someone do that if they're, I guess, like,
humorless.
Not comfortable?
Right.
What'd you say?
They're humorless. Like, their name.
But, I mean, like, I've seen, it's also in, like, dating apps when people are trying so hard in banter and it's not working out. It's like, well, not everyone has to be funny. Like, is there a point where honesty is better than humor?
I think the best humor comes from honesty.
I agree.
To be honest with you. So I don't know if that's a choice. I think that's a both. But I think for a humorless human, it's going to be tough regardless. But there's all types of different comedy. So your audience matters. You know what I mean? Get your niche. Maybe that housewarming isn't where you need to be. Maybe you need to be at Dungeons and Dragons hanging out with people where it's a little drier. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But just keep taking a crack at it. Like, and then let's just say you're so bad at it that listening and people watching and commenting on none of that's working. Like, that's even making you bomb in person more. So just like, find some basic stuff, like two or three go-tos.
Uh-huh.
And just work those.
just work those. Different punch
bowls.
Yeah,
just work those. You're at the punch bowl like, man, it was hot today. Or, woo, it was cold today. Or,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And just work those. And then, you know, listen. And then go from there with commenting on stuff. And I don't think forcing funny is good. That's corny.
Yes.
I think you just talk to someone and it's natural. Then if it's natural, it's natural.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I saw, it's not really a meme, but like I follow a lot of therapy accounts on Instagram. Or like,
why?
They're the best, Nate. You got to get
Are
on
they?
Them.
All right, give me two to follow. Therapy accounts?
Yeah, well, like, I guess like therapy. Well, no. They're like self-healing accounts.
They just post memes?
No, they're not really memes. They're just kind of like nice graphics. I call them memes because they're on the internet, but they're
okay.
If there's a therapy meme account, anyone listening, tell me. Because that sounds like something I would love.
That's probably Therameme.
Nice.
You like that?
I do like that. And you didn't walk in here with it.
Not at all.
Look at that, folks.
You got to listen,
listening
guys.
Listening matters. But the meme, I'm going to call it a meme.
Okay.
It said, what's for me will always be for me. What crashes, crashes, and what flows, flows. Like, don't force anything.
Mm.
I was like, yes.
What crashes, crashes.
And what flows will flow.
And what flows will flow.
So like whatever. But sometimes I get existential and I go, okay, well, if everything is just happening how it's going to happen, then why do I do anything?
Right.
And it's like.
I actually have a friend of mine who did an epistemology project. That's a big word for no reason. when you like have a hypothesis,
uh-huh.
That's another big word. When you have an idea and you just try it. That's an epistemology, especially when it's amongst out in the public with other people. So she basically was like, what I'm going to do for the next month is nothing related to career.
Okay.
Nothing. I'll just be regular as I could possibly be. I'll stay on the couch if I want to stay on the couch, but I'm not opening my laptop. I'm not responding to anything. I'm not checking anything. I'm not, nothing.
Whoa.
And, well, she said she would respond, but she's not reaching out to anything.
Okay.
And so what she found was things were still in motion. Mm-hmm. And some, like, a couple big opportunities came to her without trying.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's dope.
That is very cool.
So I guess
cool.
What will flow. But then on the other hand, I'm like, you would have gotten that stuff and whatever you hustled up to. It's not like the hustle made that
right
possible, you know? I don't know. My thing is, what will flow sounds like somebody who's like, I'm willing to pee anywhere. And I think that doesn't sound, I don't know. Rolling with the punches is one thing, but just what will happen? That sounds a little bit too like a hippie. Like, I think that your prayers, your wishes, your goals, your aspirations, and your effort towards them deliberately is what creates. I think the universe, I think God, I think everything that sees and hears and knows our hearts and minds and our efforts responds to that and gives us exactly what we wanted. You can talk about something you need. I need this. Gosh, I want this. You could say, dear Lord, please let me find and get this. Like, put me in a position to have this. And then go to the grocery store and somebody walks by you on the phone like, I was just talking about blah, 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 blah. And you're like, that's it.
Yeah.
Excuse me, sir.
Right.
Tell me, oh, yeah, for sure. Here. Wow.
Yeah.
How does this happen? And you could call it a deity or a theology, or you could just say, the universe respected your effort.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, if you're going to flow, is the flow.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But that what will crash stuff. So you don't put any virus guards on your computer. You can prevent, you know what I mean? You don't use turn signals.
Right.
You're just on a bike with no helmet. What will crash. No. Slow your ass down and read some of these signals and signs and drive safe.
I do think that I think you wrapped it up exactly how I want it to be wrapped up. But before we fully wrap, I want to ask one more piece of advice.
Go raw.
But from you to you, can you give yourself advice from where you are right now for 5 years ago you?
Yeah. What year is that? 2014, 2015.
Yeah, 14, 15.
Those 2 years were the same.
A lot of my years are the same. It's crazy. The older you get, the least, like, years don't matter as much. Time doesn't really matter anymore. Right. It's just like you're running out of it and you want more of it.
Yeah.
But, like, the years just blend into past.
Yeah, but then there's that time period like, I can't wait to be old enough to drink and to do stuff. God, it's so boring. Then you get there and you're like, I'm about to die. Gosh. Advice to me from 5 years ago, like say I had a time machine to go back.
Yeah, or like 10 years ago, just a younger you. Mm. What do you wish you knew then that you know now?
Maybe that's a better question. I wish I knew the things that mattered.
Like what?
Because I'm a very hard worker and a hustler and I go get it, like, because I believe what I just finished talking about. Mm-hmm. And so when you do that, you can spin your wheels on things that don't have value to your career. You may have a goal that you're like, I really want that, but why? What do you really get from that? And so if I could talk to me 5 years ago, I would say make sure that you are doing things that actually have value with your grind. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's what I would say. Stay focused on the things that actually matter.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Like listening. Look at that. We're full circle here in this house. Nate, thank you so much for all of your insight. I learned so much, which is my favorite thing to do. Where can people find you on the internet to learn even more?
Well, my website is natejacksoncomedy.com. It's going through like an overhaul right now. So social media wise, follow me at Mr. Nate Jackson on Instagram. And I think between the bio on there and the post that I make, we'll be friends. You know? Yeah.
I do love that. Tim was right. You are sweet and funny and very wise. Thank you for being here. If you guys have a sticky situation or burning concern, call us at 805-751-9071. You give us your age and we'll give you what we can with what we have. See you next week on Just a Tip. Bye. It's too high of an outro.
Nah, it was perfect. She was.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.